The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
The Chad Sox remain undefeated, getting their second win, this time against the Blue Jays, in a thrilling game on the back of a fantastic Ranger Suarez start. 5-0 brings the Red Sox up to 12 wins, 17 losses on the season. I'm Nick the Voice, joined by Jason Kelly, and we are the Bastards of Boston. So Jason, let's jump right into this Ranger Suarez start. 8 innings, only one hit allowed, one walk, which was swiftly erased by a double play, 10 strikeouts. What'd you see out there?
Yeah, this was exactly the kind of Ranger Suarez game you want to see. This is just what the doctor ordered, especially with all the drama the last couple of days. You know, you wanted your big money guy to go out there and deliver a performance like this, especially against a division rival. I know Toronto is a little banged up. They're kind of, you know, down towards the bottom of the standings with you, but it's still a team that you want to rack up wins against because they're going to get healthy. They're already getting guys back starting tomorrow. I mean, George Springer is probably going to be back tomorrow. Yes, Savage is back tomorrow. So they're not going to stay down forever. So you might as well take these wins while you can get them. And yeah, Ranger did exactly what you wanted him to do. You know, limited base runners. It was all weak contact. And he wasn't getting behind in counts either, which I really liked, because that's been a big problem for this Red Sox pitching staff early this season, is that, you know, even Connelly early sometimes, Brian Bayo's notorious for it. They get behind the count, they get in their own head, and then next thing you know, the bases are loaded and, you know, they're being pulled out of there in the fourth inning. Ranger Suarez made sure that was not going to happen tonight. And I think it was indicative of the 10 strikeouts, because he was doing exactly what he's known to do, which is he locates very well. And he locates with a variety of pitches. He keeps hitters off balance. And when you've got a lineup like this in Toronto that kind of has some guys playing that wouldn't play every day, but they're just thrust in there because of all the injuries, that's a lineup you can really feast on if you're a guy like Ranger Suarez. That's exactly what he did. So exactly what the performance of the Red Sox needed, especially after the last couple of days.
Absolutely. You know, what was really interesting is the efficiency, like you mentioned. Not a lot of wasted pitches. And in addition to a ton of swing and miss, which Ranger hasn't really been known for over the course of his career, there was also the tried and true weak contact, which he's kind of been lacking this year. It's been a very uncharacteristic year for Suarez. He hasn't looked quite as sharp overall, as far as the season goes, as he did in Philadelphia. But tonight, and also that game in Detroit, but tonight especially, this was exactly the type of, honestly, ace caliber performance Ranger has been known for over the past several years. And I'll tell you, looking at Philly's record, they could certainly use him right now. They thought that that was a deep rotation. They're right, but the guys aren't quite performing over there. Unlike Ranger, down to a 3.09 ERA on the season after a pretty shaky start, possibly thanks to the WBC. I mean, only 115 pitches by the Red Sox pitching staff tonight, 105 of them for Ranger. I think he was at about 90 after the seventh inning. I was rooting for an eighth inning. I'm so glad that they gave it to him. And he went out there and he did exactly what he had been doing every single at bat up until that point, inducing weak ground balls, weak fly balls, pop-ups. I mean, if you look at the expected batting average of the two teams tonight, it is a stellar difference. We'll get into how the Red Sox were hitting the ball in a little bit, a 289 expected batting average as a team, which is stellar. But for the Blue Jays tonight, a 0.076 expected batting average. This wasn't fluky. It wasn't great defense. It wasn't luck. If anything, Rangers one hit was a lucky double that really, you know, it was a bit of a blooper, you know, it shouldn't have really amounted to much. And I don't know, man, just watching him tonight, it was something special. Only two hard hit balls by the Toronto hitting staff against Ranger tonight. And he just went out there and looked like himself, which is so thrilling to see in a Red Sox uniform. If the Sox want to dig themselves out of the hole that they found themselves in this early in the season, a guy like Ranger Suarez, or even a guy like early last night, the pitching staff as a whole, they've got to figure it out. This is a fantastic step in the right direction.
It absolutely is. And this is a game, like, unlike we've been seeing all year, it was good pitching, smart pitching, fundamentals, and defense. I mean, Caleb Durbin made a really nice play. You mentioned the one walk he gave up. He immediately gets a tailor-made double play ball, you know, perfectly executed, all of that. It was like, what team am I watching? This is way too efficient, and the game's motoring along, and they have a lead? This is crazy. This is not the Boston Red Sox of 2026, but that's the way they looked. And you mentioned letting him go out there for the eighth inning. I really was happy about that, because I feel like with Alex Cora, he would have gotten to 90 pitches, and boom, you're out of there. And he would have put in, you know, he wouldn't have put in Weiser. He would have put in like Ryan Watson or something. And then we would have been in trouble because, you know, Toronto would have gotten guys on. And then all of a sudden, you know, it becomes a tight game again. So I'm glad that Tracy sort of recognized, like, no, he's a veteran. He's used to going deep into games. He's comfortable. He's pitching on cruise control. So he had a feel for the moment. It wasn't just, hey, look, let me look at my analytics sheet. Okay, he's got to a certain amount of pitches. We have to pull him. It was kind of that, you know, no, like, I can see that he's comfortable and he's, you know, he's attacking this lineup and he's getting through it. So let's let him go out there for an eighth inning. And you know what? If he allows a base runner, then I'll pull him, right? Like, I'm not going to let him go too deep into it, but he was fine. You know, pitched the eighth inning, you know, really quickly. And, you know, then you just bring in Weiser to finish the ninth. And luckily, five runs was enough for Greg Weiser to not blow it tonight. So that was good too. Yeah, everything about it was just well executed. And it was one of those like feel of the moment kind of games, which I was happy to see from the new manager.
It really was, you know, just a lot of things went well. And I see a couple of comments here that, you know, I just wanted to mention. I see one from Jules, a longtime listener. He says, no velocity required, pitching is an art. And it's very true. You know, you hear it all the time these days of guys chasing velocity, and guys like Suarez, they are not necessarily a dying breed, but they're holdovers from a previous generation. And a lot of people would say, myself included, to be honest, a better generation. Being able to throw 101 absolutely is a skill and an asset, but not every guy is the physical beast like Aroldis Chapman, capable of throwing that gas, especially once you factor in starting pitching. You know, having this dude just go in there and be able to use his arsenal well to fool a Blue Jays lineup that is not bad. You know, I know that they're not the strongest the Blue Jays have ever been, and not even the strongest the Blue Jays will be this season, but there are some really good hitters in this core. You know, Vladdy G, he ended up being really a non-factor. Yeah, two strikeouts and three at-bats this game, and he had this one challenged strike call on the ABS, and it managed to clip the zone. You know, it fooled him. Honestly, that is the type of stuff I love to see. And it's so fun to see this duel between Suarez and Cease, right? The two guys who, along with a guy like King and a guy like Valdez, these were kind of the big pitching targets, right? And everyone was rightfully a little concerned, I think, in Red Sox Nation, seeing this matchup coming up. Cease was coming in with a stellar ERA of, I think, about one something. It was ridiculous. And I saw, you know, on Twitter, I saw Cutter is King retweet a Blue Jays account, which, you know, I won't read the name for obvious reasons, but I did want to read the tweet just because it was making me laugh. This was posted yesterday. Ranger Suarez versus Dylan Cease. Tomorrow might be the most narrative-laden, agenda-pushing baseball game I've ever been a part of. If you followed me this past winter, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And, you know, that was filled with comments from other Blue Jays fans saying, you know, making jokes about Ranger Suarez, saying it was a must-win game, you know, saying that it was going to be a boom or bust game for the narrative, saying that Suarez's Savant page was very blue. All of those things true. And, you know, my only response to that is he was right. This was kind of an agenda-ridden game because Ranger Suarez went out there and looked exactly like vintage Philly Ranger, and Cease went out there, and I don't know what they were thinking sending him out for the sixth inning. In the fifth, he totally lost command of the zone, was throwing balls all over the place, balls in the dirt, outside the zone, non-competitive at bats. And they sent him out in the sixth, and he did the same exact thing. Honestly, easily the worst start of his 2026, and exactly demonstrating all of the red flags that people who didn't want Cease on the Red Sox were waving.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for the first four or so innings, he did look like a $200 million pitcher. He came out of the gates hot. You know, he was striking out guys left and right. But then the wheels came off. And the problem with a guy like Dylan Cease is once he stops getting the strikeouts and once he stops getting the calls he wants, I mean, granted, he was asking for some that were like 2 feet above the zone. And he's, you know, throwing his arms up at the umpire. Like, dude, you're not even close. But that's kind of who he is. He's one of those guys that, yeah, he's very good. He's extremely talented. And again, he can strike out 220 guys a year. But if it's not going his way, he's a mental case. And we saw that. I mean, this Red Sox lineup is not anything to be afraid of right now. I mean, they're not playing very well. There's a lot of guys you can attack. And granted, there still are. I mean, and we'll get to the lineup later. But, you know, and those guys he did go after. Trevor Story, he knew. He's like, I can strike you out on three pitches. I can throw one right down the middle that you'll look at. I'll throw one 2 feet out of the zone that you'll stupidly swing at. And then I'll just blow a heater by you. That's exactly what he did. So he still was able to get, you know, the weaker parts of the Red Sox lineup. But the rest of it, yeah, he lost control. And then he was trying to, you know, pinpoint. He was trying to paint a little bit too much. Wasn't getting the calls. And you can see the frustration. He's not exactly someone who hides his emotions very well on the mound. He's got a little bit of Brian Bayo in him. And then it wasn't just like that he was losing control on the mound. I mean, he gets a tapper back to the mound and he trips over, goes ass over tea kettle. I don't know how he managed to do that, but as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, he's just completely, he's lost it. I mean, this is like, he's just in his own head now. He can't even feel the simple little tapper to the mound. So look, good on the Red Sox for kind of grinding it out because, again, a guy like that who likes to strike out batters, he's going to come out of the gates hot, and he did. But they weathered that early storm. They got to the second time through the lineup, and they knew kind of what to look for. They faced Dylan Cease plenty of times. It's interesting because he actually has a bad career ERA against the Red Sox. I think it's like over six, which is weird because the last time he faced him was with San Diego and he shut him out for seven innings. So this must have been back in his White Sox days when, you know, he was still a little bit younger. But yeah, they knew what they were looking for. So they weathered the early storm and then got to work. And this offense is still very flawed, but when they are able to grind out at bats and, you know, not just swing out of their shoes every single time and actually execute some good at bats, they can get through. They can get guys on base and they can score runs. So that was encouraging to see.
Most definitely. You know, just a huge step in the right direction, like I said. And before we go into this offense, because there's been some interesting things, certainly. I mean, tonight was a very fun game. Last night was a very fun game. I just wanted to comment on this Chad Tracy era in the incredibly small sample size that we have. And, you know, one thing that obviously it's way too early to really tell or predict how a guy manages games, but everyone's saying it. This dude is trusting his starters, right? In both games that he's managed now, early, 6.2. The first time that he's gone that deep this year, possibly in his career. I don't think he went that far previously either. On 92 pitches, very, very good. Now, getting eight innings out of Ranger Suarez. That's the second time Ranger has thrown eight this season, but the first time he's exceeded 100 pitches. That is a really good sign to me because, you know, on previous shows, I was complimentary of guys like Moran, of Kelly even, of Watson, saying at least we have guys who can eat massive innings to try to prevent the bullpen overusage that we saw last year, right? Get rid of the burnout. Don't let guys get to that point. But a big part of that isn't just having a bunch of long relievers on staff who can give you two to three. Obviously, it's nice to have, but really a big part of preserving that bullpen is having starters who can give you six or seven innings reliably. And these days, that is an asset that is not a given like it used to be.
Absolutely. And you have to wonder, like, Breslow must have gotten very frustrated with Alex Cora, the way he handled the pitching staff, because Cora would pull guys early And then with his bullpen, he'd have bullpen guys go way too deep into the game. You know, trusting guy like Ryan Watson, who's barely pitched at the major league level, to go 2+ innings just because you don't want to use your other relievers. It's like, it had to have been maddening, because what you saw tonight, this is what they were built for. This is what they said they were going to do, right? Focus on starting pitching, focus on starting pitchers that can go deep, you know, such as Ranger Suarez, Garrett Crochet, Sonny Gray when he's healthy. You know, Brian Bayo doesn't quite fit that bill, but they're stuck with him. Connelly Early, I think, is showing you that he, you know, has the maturity. He can go deep into a game. He knows how to manage that. We'll see if Peyton Tolley can start to stretch out a little bit more. But yeah, they want starters to go deep, go to the sixth, seventh inning, and then use your best relievers for those innings and have them go just the one inning. One clean inning, get out of there, and then go on to the next reliever. Don't have Weiser try and pitch, you know, 1 2/3, because, you know, you don't want to go to another reliever. It doesn't work. So I think you're going to see a big difference, because I think Tracy is one of those guys that, like you said, he trusts his pitchers and he knows that he's got a really good starting rotation, especially when they're all healthy, that they should be able to pitch deep into games. So I'm curious to see how he'll handle someone like Brian Bayo, who, you know, can definitely be a bit of a project, but I wonder if he kind of lets Bayo figure it out a little bit more, because Cora, you could tell, just got so frustrated. Like, Bayo would get to 50 pitches by the third inning and Cora's yanking him because he's just frustrated and, you know, can't handle it anymore. Maybe Tracy, you know, can get through to him. He's supposed to be good with the younger guys. Maybe he says, hey, you know, you got to sort it out on the mound. You're good enough to do it. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I'm very encouraged early on that I like his sort of feel for the pitching staff. And I think that can make a big difference.
Definitely. You know, I think just another comment, you know, even the Cora defenders out there, they saw that the vibes weren't really there. He looked kind of checked out. He looked tired. He looked frustrated. A lot of guys on the Red Sox did, players included. And right now, I mean, sometimes a big shift like this can cause a much more, I don't know, positive atmosphere, I guess. Seems like some of the kids are having a good time. Marcelo Mayer, let's talk about this guy, who is finally breaking out two really big hits tonight. And of course, the defense remains smooth, but the hits have finally come around. You look at his bat in multiple sample sizes now, and it is improving. This is a dude who is not K-ing that much this season. He's not chasing that much this season. And finally, much like I was predicting earlier in the season when I saw the barrel percentage was good initially, right out the gate, really, I said the hits are going to come. And they're finally coming. I mean, you look at this dude, he's got a 367 on base in the last 15 games. He's got a 444 average in the last seven, slugging 611. He's got 8 hits, 4 RBIs in the last 7 games. That is substantial. And it just adds to the fact that we've all been saying it. This guy really should be playing every day. He's 23 years old. Give him some seasoning. I think from what we heard, you know, it's not the intention to play him every game versus lefties, but I think the intention is there to get him at least some at-bats, and that is totally fine with me, so long as you aren't married to him as a platoon player, like Cora seemed to be. And, you know, you say, hey, we have Monasterio. He's sort of the Romy that isn't Romy right now. So we want to get him into the lineup versus lefties. Okay, I get that. I totally do. But you've got to let Marcelo develop, because I'm telling you, this guy is special. You know, if his floor is a 700 OPS player with his glove, he's going to be a war machine, an incredibly valuable player, so long as he stays healthy. And that is really something worth pushing towards and seeing. Is he real? Is he legit? Or is he a bust? The only way to find that out for certain is to play him. And I think 100% let's go all in.
Yeah, I think the locker room is still going to be divided a little bit over the Alex Cora firing. He still had some loyal guys in there, as we now know. Trevor Story was one of them. I think one guy that's very happy to see him go, though, is Marcelo Mayer. Because, I mean, ever since he got called up, I feel like Cora was like, I don't know, you know, just didn't have, you know, wasn't excited about him, didn't believe in him. This entire spring, Cora was dicking around with him. Like, ah, well, you know, because Mayer would get like 3 days off. And Cora would be like, well, we want to mix some other guys in. And, you know, no position is guaranteed here. And, you know, we need Marcelo to, you know, do the things that we're asking him to do. And it's like, what is your deal with Marcelo Meyer? Like, he just kept singling him out. And then you get into the regular season, we thought, okay, well, surely Meyer made the team. He's going to be playing most days, right? Nope. Cora would do the same thing, you know, move him around different positions and then bench him against every lefty that ever came up. Even bad lefties, Meyer would be sitting. I'm going, well, what's the point of that? This kid was your number one pick 4 years ago. Like, you should be investing in him. You should be letting him develop at the major league level. And it's like, Cora just didn't want to do that. So I think this will be a very good change for Marcelo Meyer, because I think Chad Tracy obviously knows him very well from his time down there in Worcester. You know, kind of already made that comment. Like you said, he's not going to play against every lefty, but I think the words he used, like, I think it's important for him to get at bats against lefties regardless. So to me, that says, like, okay, he might sit him against Tarik Skubal. Okay, fine. That's okay. No problem. But can you pitch him? You know, can you let him hit against, you know, Keegan Aiken or, you know, a bad lefty from Minnesota or something? Like, that's what Cora wasn't doing. So I think Meyer is, he probably feels like a major weight has been lifted off his shoulders because Cora's not, you know, stepping on his neck anymore. So I think you're going to see him kind of play the way that he wants to, because Meyer kind of has a little bit of early days Robbie Cano in him, where he plays very fluidly, very smoothly. Like, some guys look at that and they say, oh, he's not trying. Like, I think Cora, who's kind of like an old school baseball guy, looks at Meyer and goes, okay, well, that's, you don't have to be flashy and, you know, like, doesn't look like he's really trying. It's like, that's just who Marcelo Meyer is. You know, he's just got the laid back, you know, the, you know, tousled hair, like, you know, whatever. Like, that's just who he is. Let him be him. You know, that was the thing. Cora didn't let the young guys just be themselves. He wanted every, you know, Roman Anthony, Marcelo Meyer, all these young guys, he wanted them to be like him when he was a player. Because Cora had to grind his whole career. He had to grind for playing time because he was a utility guy and he wasn't the most talented guy in the room. So he had to, you know, really put his nose to the grindstone and really, you know, prove himself. And that's fine. That's all well and good. Good for him. But these guys don't necessarily need to do that. Marcelo Meyer is naturally gifted athlete. Roman Anthony, naturally gifted. And if you're, you know, hanging over their shoulders too much, then it's going to get in their heads. And especially if you just straight up bench them, I mean, how's he supposed to develop when he's sitting on the bench? So I think the Chad Tracy era, you're going to see the young guys playing a little more free, which is what they should be doing, because at the end of the day, they've made it to this point. They've made it to the major league level. I think they've both, at least Anthony and Meyer, have shown you when they're playing good, what the potential can be. And the potential can be very high. So I'm already liking that aspect of it. And I think you're going to see a much better level from Marcelo Meyer now that now the managerial change has been made.
What I'm really hoping to see, too, is I just get the feeling that Anthony and Meyer, they're the two guys, they're the type of players, they're going to feed off each other. You know, when they're in a slump, maybe they're going to slump together. But when they're having great at-bats, having great games, those two have come up through the system so intertwined, you know, their journey has been, that I really can see them just like vibing. You know, these are the guys that are going to be clubhouse leaders. Roman Anthony, one of the first players to actually speak out after the Cora firing. I mean, these dudes, 21 and 23, like it or not, they're the future, but they're also kind of the present. It's bizarre. They are mature beyond their years. And I know I've heard some people talk about their partying after games, whatnot. I don't mind that so much, so long as the results on the field remain good and, you know, the presence in the clubhouse remains good. Both of those things seem to be checking boxes. So I'm cool with it. 21 and 23, I don't even want to tell you where my head was at those ages. You know, and these dudes, they show up, they're poised, they're calm, they're level-headed, and they just work on their game. You know, Roman has been off to a bit of a controversial start, I guess. The power hasn't really been there necessarily, although if you look at the exit velocity, the barrel rate, everything, it has. You know, he's just not really getting into home runs. But one thing that has been working, no matter what, for Roman is, regardless of the sample size, you could say, oh, well, the average is bad. Oh, the OPS is underwhelming. You're right. The on base is really, really good. The discipline is through the roof. And much like with Meyer, the barrel rate is there, so I have to expect sooner or later this dude is just going to start hitting bombs. And, you know, before I hand it over to you, I just have to say, batting him third right now, it's kind of working. batting Meyer sixth right now, kind of working. And I'll tell you something, if Meyer continues to improve, maybe he leapfrogs Story in the lineup, and that might be good for everyone.
Yeah, 100%. I like the batting lineup the way it is. I love that he moved Duran back to leadoff and put Anthony third. I think that's where Roman should be hitting. Roman's not a leadoff hitter, even though he does have a very good batter's eye. Like you said, he does get on base at a high clip, but that's still valuable in the middle part of your lineup. It doesn't have to be your leadoff guy. And I think moving Duran back there, look, you got to keep Jaron Duran as happy as you can. And, you know, you mentioned that Roman Anthony was one of the first ones to speak up after this whole thing. Yeah, he had to because Jaron Duran refused to. So, you know, still some maturity issues with the 29-year-old in the locker room. Meanwhile, the 21-year-old seems to be doing just fine. But yeah, if that's what you need to keep Jaron Duran's head out of his ass and put him in leadoff, fine. Let him hit leadoff. And, you know, didn't do much tonight, but he is hitting the ball very hard. So that's one of those indicators, like you said. It's like, it's coming. He's going to break out of it. It's just, you know, sometimes you hit a couple of atom balls. Sucks. But he's hitting the ball hard. He's seeing the ball well. So, and you know what? I don't know if he's still pissed that Cora's gone, if he's happy because now he gets hit leadoff again. Who knows? But if he's happy for now, he'll break out of it. Roman, he's going to get there. Yeah, he's going to get there. I don't know what his power output's going to be. That's the thing. None of us really do. He showed a little bit of pop last year, you know, limited sample size. But this is why I told everyone, pump the brakes when they say, oh, Roman can be the 25 home run guy. You don't know that. Yeah, he put on a ton of muscle in the offseason, like a lot of kids do at that age. Doesn't mean he's going to hit 40 bombs this year. I'll be surprised if he gets to 20. I mean, I just don't think that he's that kind of hitter, which is not necessarily a bad thing, because I don't think Roman goes up there looking to launch every single at bat. I think he's very good at reading the strike zone. He's very good at, you know, taking a pitch and kind of going the other way with it if he has to. He's not up there looking to go 500 feet every single time. So, you know, you might have a number three hitter in Roman Anthony who has a very high on base. You know, I think the batting average will get back up there too, but he's going to be a guy who probably doesn't strike out a lot. And yeah, he might be a 17 to 20 home run guy. That's okay. That's still fine. Again, he doesn't have to be David Ortiz. Like, not every prospect has to hit 40 home runs to be valuable. You know, there's a lot of guys that don't, but they're, you know, they're super valuable anyway. So I agree. I think it's going to come with him. Meyer, if he keeps heating up, I agree. Like, he should move up in the order. And it's time to start de-emphasizing guys like Trevor Story, you know, who just is a strikeout machine. And I don't know what has gone on with that guy, because his under-the-hood numbers are scary this year. Like, he is chasing at an astronomical rate. He's not swinging at pitches that are, like, right down the middle. I'm kind of, every time he's at bat, I'm like, are you seeing okay? Like, you know, do we need to do the Major League Baseball thing or Major League where we get you the horn-rimmed glasses so you can see the ball better? Like, it's frightening what's going on with him. He might even get leapfrogged by Caleb Durbin. Caleb Durbin at least gave you a couple of good at-bats tonight and is, you know, playing some good defense over a third. So, yeah, I think Tracy is going to be one of these guys. He's going to go with the flow. And if Meyer starts to really heat up and Story's still striking out three times a night, then, yeah, I could see him getting demoted in the order.
Yeah, you know, Story's just one of those guys. It's funny, right? We heard all the quotes come out, and we heard this one, which I just pulled up, that the front office was not fully convinced by his 2025 numbers, and questions were raised internally when he hit number two. And all I'm thinking was, well, how long did it take them to know that? We've been saying that for months. I've been saying that since the end of the last year. Honestly, it's ridiculous. Yeah, the under-the-hood numbers weren't even good last year when he went on a good run. I said, this is a red flag. This is a guy who's going to be a regression candidate, and he concerns me. And what do you know? He's regressing. Honestly, there's some debate over whether Trevor Story should even be on the team right now. And I know last year at the same time, there was the same debate, and then he went on a heater midway through the season. Maybe he'll do the same thing. At the end of the day, if you're paying him $25 million a year, no one's going to touch a cent of that. So you may as well just see what you get with him, I suppose. It does frustrate me to play him at shortstop where he is a total net negative defensively. And it's a shame because he's flanked by two very good defenders in Durbin and Meyer. But, you know, Story is just one of those dudes that I'm really hoping wakes up but I'm very afraid is not going to. And I see a highlight of the comment here from Brad Sandler. Is there anyone in our system that could help more than Story? What do you think?
Sorry, your button didn't work. So the obvious answer that everyone gives is Franklin Arias, because what he's doing in AA so far is extremely impressive. I've talked about this before. I don't want them rushing Franklin Arias. Don't pull a Benintendi and yank him straight out of AA, bring him to the majors just because Trevor Story can't hit. One guy that you might want to look at is Mikey Romero. Mikey Romero's been in their system a little bit longer. He's naturally a second baseman, but I think he can play shortstop. But also, if we're just getting rid of Story anyway and bringing up a kid, put Romero at second, put Meyer at short. Boom. That could be your middle infield for the next, you know, 6-7 years if you want to. Romero's a good hitter, and he's one of those guys, like, he was kind of on a Chase Mydroth level a couple of years ago where they liked him, but he was not necessarily someone that they were going to invest heavily in. And then last year he took off, you know, played really well at AA, got promoted, and just kept hitting. And now he's starting to add a little bit of power to his game as well. So Mikey Romero might be a guy to take a look at. If Story needs an IL stint, you know, just to kind of, you know, and it's one of those, I put in air quotes, IL stint. It's really just them saying, why don't you go away for 2 weeks and, you know, go see an eye doctor or something and then come back and let's see if we can figure this out. Or if you get to middle of May, you know, or even Memorial Day, and he's still not hitting and they just decide, you know what, we're better off just DFAing you because, you know, it's if you're going to be this bad, you're taking up a roster spot, you can't field your position anymore. I don't think it was the smartest thing for him to mouth off to Greg Breslow as soon as his protector, Alex Cora, got fired. So maybe not the best career move on Trevor Story's part. I mean, he'll get his money regardless, so maybe he doesn't care. But yeah, Mikey Romero would be the guy. I think if there's anyone that they could call up like right now who I think wouldn't, you know, be overwhelmed by the moment, it would be him. But I think you're waiting until at least Memorial Day to really make any big roster moves like that. Because like you said, last year we got to May and all of a sudden here comes Trevor Story starting to hit the ball out of the park. Maybe he just needs the warmer weather. I don't know. So that's a guy to keep an eye on, definitely for now. But I think you're waiting until at least Memorial Day to make any big moves.
Definitely. You know, I'll be honest with you. At this point, I would be content with just a glove first option. You know, if you're going to have someone with a 500 to 600 OPS playing shortstop, at least have them be rangy, at least have them be providing that gold glove caliber type of defense. You know, maybe that's a guy like Meyer, maybe it's a guy like IKF, honestly. But I agree, you know, Romero is a really promising prospect. Maybe Campbell can figure something out. He's still young. It's possible the changing of the guard is going to come into effect here. But, you know, I'm just sort of buckling up and saying this is the Story experience, unfortunately. I'm more disappointed with the fact that he's on the books for next year as well. That stings me more than anything to such an extent that I hope he does heat up. I hope he does go on an incredible run so that we can deal him at the deadline for an okay return and go with that glove first option until Arias, who I agree we shouldn't rush, is ready to hopefully take charge. And that probably won't be for another year and a half, maybe, you know? So in this case, it really is just one of those things. I guess you got to buckle up and enjoy the ride, you know, as terrible as it's been. But it's a shame because everyone tonight was putting up such great at-bats. Even the outs looked good, you know? And I wanted to bring up Jarren Duran's numbers tonight, too. A lot of people already noticed them. But I just wanted to shout out how, you know, an 0-5 game, it looks very different, right? They come in different shapes and sizes. Jarren Duran tonight with one strikeout, he had a ground out with a 450 expected batting average, a line out with a 510, a force out with a 460, and a line out with a 700. That's a guy who's hitting the ball very well. Three of those exit velocities deep in the red, over 104 miles per hour, peaking at 108 almost. I mean, the dude was smacking the ball really well. You combine that with his speed, you provide the defense that he's been able to give us in the past in left field and in even center field, and you're looking at a guy who still can be an extremely productive player. And I'm glad that he's getting that opportunity. Obviously, it's going to come at the cost of someone, whether it's Yoshida, whether it's Roman Anthony in left field, obviously being pushed to DH the past two games. But whatever it is, I mean, I just like seeing him out there. I like seeing the faith, you know, put him at first, see what happens. Because, you know, neither of us, I don't think, are huge Duran fans by any means. I'm not a Duran defender by any means, but at the end of the day, this is kind of the guy who you have to play, because you can't deal him when he's where he is right now. You can't cut him because his ceiling is too high, and you kind of have to play him because he has the psychology of a dirt dog who wants to play 162. So hopefully he can get this momentum going tonight, despite not getting a hit. Was a really good step in the right direction for him.
Yeah, he's a catalyst. At the end of the day, when he's on, he's a catalyst for this offense. That's what made him so good in 2024. Yeah, he took a little bit of a step back in 2025, but was still a very productive player. I mean, you take a step back from being a 9-WAR player in 2024, that's not the worst thing. And yeah, like right now, it's the numbers aren't there, but everything he hit tonight was hard contact. I mean, he was hitting the ball sharp. That last line out, I mean, if it's not for a spectacular catch by Schneider out there, that's probably a triple. If that's at Fenway, that's going off the wall. So, you know, it's one of those things where for him, it sucks because, yeah, he has to wear the over and his numbers continue to decline. And people are saying, oh, well, this guy's just not worth it. He might get benched tomorrow because of the outfield logjam. It's just the reality. Unfortunately, Hauk's core is gone, but that isn't. So that's going to be something that Tracy's going to have to navigate. So, yeah, I can see how he'd be very frustrated. And then you have all the drama going on, you know, that certainly doesn't help, but he's another guy, he's going to climb out of it, you know. And I think one thing that I noticed that he did kind of go back to the batting stance he was using during the spring and during the World Baseball Classic, you know, it's just a little bit different. His hands are a little bit higher and he's kind of doing like a one-handed follow through on his swing, which he didn't do that last year. He always did the two-handed follow through. And I remember seeing that in the World Baseball Classic, he hit a missile in one of those games for Mexico, and it was a one-handed fall through. Didn't look like it was going to be much, and then it went like 430 feet. So, and they talked about how that was an adjustment he made, that he kind of looked at his stance and talked to some people and, you know, was trying to do things differently with his hands. So if that's, you know, if that helps him, great. Like I said, I hope Tracy keeps him at leadoff because I think that's where he wants to be. Like Duran wants to be the guy that sets the table. Right, he wants to get on base, use his speed, you know, frustrate the pitcher, and kind of get the lineup going, get the conveyor belt of offense going, if you will. So hopefully, you know, he comes out of it soon. Again, it's tough because he's not going to get the chance to play 5-6 days in a row. He just won't. With the logjam, until that gets fixed, until someone gets dealt, he's going to get a day off every 2-3 days. And I think for someone like him, that's just not ideal. I think he wants to kind of string something together. So that's frustrating for him, but yeah, he's going to climb out of it. It's just everything, hitting the ball that hard and that consistently, you're not going to be going 0 for 5 forever. Eventually, those are going to start to get by people. Eventually, those are going to start to lift more. Again, with the warmer weather, the ball does fly more. So that's definitely going to happen. So he's still poised to have a pretty good year, but you know, he's just got to get there. And we'll see if the logjam ever gets fixed. You know, it's going to take a little bit, but yeah, I'm not too worried about him. I think he'll be fine.
Most definitely. And, you know, I think that this is probably the best the lineup, or at least the top of the lineup, can look right now. I have more faith in the Duran, Contreras, Anthony, Abreu matchup, I guess, or order, than I have in really any 1-4 we put out so far. This just feels better. It feels dynamic. Abreu's hitting the ball very well again, which is wonderful to see. His under the hood metrics are just phenomenal this year. Savant Page is all red. You know, this dude is going to be an all-star this year, I hope, if he continues this trend, and a much needed one as well. But I think that if we can figure out the 5-6 situation, we might actually get this offense to a point where I say, I'm feeling all right. Maybe not great, but all right. You know, whether it's Story doing his midseason magic, maybe it's Meyer heating up, maybe it's Rafaela staying on this new approach that he has where he's been a little more disciplined, a little more cautious, you know, with balls outside the zone. I like Durbin number nine more than anywhere above that spot, certainly. But one sneaky player who could have a bit of a resurgence, was a big part of the team last year, of course, that's Carlos Narvaez, having a very quiet season thus far. And yet, two home runs in the last three games. Looking at his seven-game sample size, seeing that he really has been quite productive lately, those two home runs obviously carrying a lot of weight. But what shocked me is pulling up Narvaez's Savant page, right? I knew that there was going to be a lot of blue on there. I knew that he wasn't really walking. He was striking out a lot. And I also knew, however, that the catching defense was going to be amazing. What shocked me was to find that Carlos Narvaez is in the 91st percentile of average exit velocity. This dude is absolutely hammering the ball, 93.2 miles per hour. And it's just another one of those cases, like the rest of the team. You start elevating the ball more while making that kind of contact, and I think that good things are going to start to happen. For Narvaez, it's been two home runs in the last three-game sample size. For other guys like Duran, it's been pretty consistently good lineouts or sharp grounders. But, I mean, this offense, Breslow's not wrong when he says there's potential here. Maybe not for a great offense, league-leading, but to say that we're going to keep being a bottom five like we've been, I mean, you have to hope the talent is going to prove that wrong and at least elevate itself to middle of the pack.
Yeah, they're never going to be a top offense, right? They're not going to be a top five, maybe not top 10 MLB-wide, but can you be top 10 in the American League? Absolutely they can. You have a better lineup than the Rays. You've got a better lineup than the White Sox and the Guardians and the Angels. So yeah, they can definitely climb back up there and, you know, at least be competitive in their own league. Now, MLB-wide, they're probably looking at best middle of the pack, like you said, like 15th, 16th, something like that. The National League just has so many good lineups that, you know, that makes it tough. Yeah, and you know, you get a guy like Narvaez who he played a lot last year because Connor Wong was just, unfortunately, kind of useless last year. And Cora just never wanted to take Narvaez out of the lineup. Then he had the knee problem, which obviously hampered him a little bit. So now he's healthy, and Connor Wong actually looks like he's kind of figured it out. He's, you know, he's not tearing the cover off the ball like he was in the spring, but he's still playing well enough that I think Tracy will look at it and say, okay, I don't need Narvaez to play, you know, 6-7 days in a row. I can put Connor Wong in there, give Narvaez a break, and then he'll stay healthier throughout the year. And look, Narvaez is a strong dude. I mean, he's, you know, for a catcher, he's built like very big. So he's got the power. And yeah, when he runs into one, he can really hit it far. So I think that raw power is always going to be part of his game. It's just a matter of, can he stay healthy enough to, you know, really drive off that knee and, you know, provide some good offense. And you know what? You never need your catcher to be a good offensive player. It helps. It obviously helps, but not every catcher is going to be Buster Posey. But if Narvaez can hit 250 with a little bit of power and play good defense behind the plate, that's a huge asset to have. So looking good so far. I'm glad to see the power's coming back. But I'm also glad to see that Connor Wong looks like he's playing pretty well too. And I think he will have a true catching tandem this year, as opposed to Narvaez having to play, you know, 90% of the games. Then, okay, we have to put Wong in there because Narvi's knees are screaming at him. Like, I think it will be a little bit more of a balance this year, which will be good for both of them.
Definitely. And, you know, this bench and this roster, it's one of those things that the construction leads to a lot of headaches, obviously. But like you said, keeping guys healthy, in good shape, fresh, whether it's the catching situation, whether it's giving Anthony and Duran a lot of days off because of Yoshida or whatever. I mean, at least there is the plus of freshness there, right? And Yoshida's bat hasn't been the problem so far, certainly. We'll definitely see. I'm interested in seeing if Anthony gets games in left field, right? Two DHs in a row, probably just because of that back tightness would be my guess. But it's interesting to keep an eye on. So long as Duran is on the team, I mean, his glove is good enough. Obviously, last year, he earned a bit of a reputation for sloppy defense. but at the end of the road, it wasn't actually all that bad. He was a net positive defensive player, I do think, off the top of my head. I might be wrong. But let's go into tomorrow's matchup. We have a really exciting one on a Tuesday night, 7:07 p.m. Eastern Standard, or Eastern Daylight, rather. It's going to be Peyton Tolley making another start versus Blue Jays rookie Trey Yesavage, one of the best names in baseball, I think, who I believe is making his debut in 2026, only has three starts under his belt, but of course, a very impressive postseason run last year. This is going to be a battle of promise. How are you feeling going into this matchup?
I'm actually feeling pretty good. I think that's the first time I've been able to say this all season, going into a potential matchup that I actually like this for the Red Sox. What Peyton Tolley showed you, his last start was incredible. I mean, he looks like a completely different guy. Looks like he wants to be up here to stay. He doesn't want to give up his rotation spot. So I think he can pitch very well. Toronto, you know, their lineup is still decimated. They're going to get Springer back probably tomorrow. But, you know, he's just coming back. Is he truly fully healthy? And then he's got to stand in there in a box against Peyton Tolley. That's no easy task. So I think Tolley, like Ranger Suarez, he can kind of feast a little bit on this lineup the way it is now. Yesavage is really good. We saw that last year. He's incredible, but his rehab starts were rough. He came away from his rehab starts with an ERA near 9 and just, yeah, was getting absolutely lit up. And I think Toronto's just kind of hoping that, okay, it was rehab starts. He wasn't putting everything into it. Let's bring him back because Toronto's desperate. They just lost Max Scherzer again to the IL. So I think at this point, they're just anyone who's even somewhat healthy, just please come back and help us. So they might be rushing Yesavage a little bit. So we'll see. This is another game where the Red Sox are going to have to be patient, right? Because he's going to be working out some kinks. So he may not have the best control or command early on. So, you know, stay in there, take some pitches and grind it out. Make this guy work for it because he's probably not 100%. So if you can get to him early and, you know, get that pitch count up, then Toronto, they'll probably do the smart thing. They'll protect him, pull him out of the game early, and then you can go to work on their bullpen, which is, I think, pretty average. So I like this for the Red Sox tomorrow. I think if Tolley can do what he did, you know, at least close to that level of what he did in his last start, I think the Red Sox offense can get to Yesavage and get him out of there early.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the Blue Jays have just had horrendous luck with injuries. Of course, they have signed a few guys like Bieber, like Scherzer, who are injury prone. So you can say that, you know, luck is the residue of design in a lot of ways. But I mean, the Yesavage injury, Springer, so on and so forth, just so many guys going down already. It has been unfortunate to see. Of course, their loss is our gain, hopefully, and we're catching them at the right time. This is going to be a fun one. I mean, Tolley versus Yesavage, both guys with incredible stuff and not a ton of footage on them. I forget who it was in the war room for the Bastards, but you know, we mentioned that when a pitcher doesn't really have any footage that the opposing offense can go and dig into and learn their habits and their tells and whatnot, sometimes they feast. You know, we sort of saw that with Tolley versus the Yankees, an absolutely disgusting debut that hopefully he's going to build on. Of course, it could be matched. Like you said, Yesavage coming off that soreness, we'll see how much it affects him. But I agree with you completely when you said that this is a game that you feel comfortable in, which for the 2026 Red Sox, those have been coming at a premium, and it's refreshing. That being said, I've been a jinx for the Red Sox thus far, so I'm going to predict we're going to lose, and I'm going to hope that you know, I'll throw the record, the prediction record, on the line for this and say we don't have a chance and hope that, you know, I can speak it into existence in the inverse, you know? But no, it's going to be exciting to see what lineup we get. Obviously, Yoshida isn't going to stay benched forever. I wouldn't doubt if he's in the lineup tomorrow against right-handed and sore Yesavage. Maybe give Anthony a day off, depending on how his back is feeling. But regardless, it's going to be a lot of fun. We have the whole bullpen to play with, Whitlock, Chapman, and we have a kid who I'm really hoping can go out there and keep a spot in the rotation. Because if Tolley and Early can join Suarez and Crochet, presumably, assuming he gets back into shape, then this Red Sox rotation could be extremely dangerous, just like we predicted in the preseason. So fingers crossed, the Sox can go on a little bit of a run here. Any final thoughts
Only final thought is if Tolley pitches really well tomorrow, Brian Bello may be pitching for his job on Wednesday because he's got options. And at this point, you know, if you can't figure it out, they can send you down to Worcester and you can figure it out there. So watch to see how Peyton Dooley does tomorrow because Brian Bello should be paying very close attention to that.
Yeah, I agree completely. And honestly, maybe a stint down in AAA would be the best thing for him. Obviously, a lot of guys have flourished in the Red Sox minor league system. And hopefully, you know, despite the shuffle, they'll continue to do so. Winning a series versus the Blue Jays would be huge, especially coming off of the Orioles and Yankees series. Hopefully they're able to do it. Thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. Huge active chat on YouTube and on Twitter, actually, which has been really fun to see. The chat's been blowing up. Thank you so much for joining us. Remember, if you're just listening, you can always join us live. We record these post games after the games conclude, typically within some time frame. We also post written articles on BastardsBostonBaseball.com. And of course, we post these everywhere that we, you know, you can listen to podcasts. We also have our own personal Twitters, which I won't plug, but they always pop up whenever you see us on the video. If you are audio only, all of us are active on X or whatever it's called now. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. Fingers crossed that the Red Sox can continue a heater tomorrow. And take care. Goodbye.